shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I let you love.
GlobalRadioTalkShow.com is on the air today from Washington, D.C. and San Diego, California. This is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusiness.net, and your host on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com. And our guest today is Mr. Hampton Dowling, who's managing partner of the HCB Group. He's based in Washington, D.C., and Hampton is steeped in international business. Let's welcome Hampton Dowling.
Hey, Ed. It's good to be with you again. Thanks for inviting me on board.
Pleasure. Actually, this is your third time with us, and I really appreciate this continuum.
And every time I talk to you, the world goes through so many changes, so it's always timely to regroup with you. Look forward to seeing you again when you're out.
This is really amazing what's going on. So let's just zero in on a few things here.
Sure.
Politics is part of business, and it will certainly enter into this conversation. We'll just call it geopolitics. So, first of all, what's your interpretation of this phrase, geopolitics?
I tell my son, he goes to the University of Virginia, he's a foreign affairs major, and you know, he's always coming to me with questions, and Dad, what do you think about this, what do you think about that? And about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, he said, Dad, what is it that you really have to understand the most when it comes to foreign affairs, when it comes to politics? What is it that you really need to understand? And I kind of scratched my head a little bit, and I said, you know, Bryce, I think the one thing that you need to understand more than anything, I mean, and you have to understand everything, but if you have to rack and stack everything, the one item that if you don't know really well will be a deficit. I said, you have to understand geography. You have to understand where countries are. What are the rivers? What are the oceans? What are the natural resources? Where are the people? Where are the population centers? Because understanding that leads you to understand other things, and the other things include politics. Because if you understand geography and the elements of geography, stepped in all that is politics, the politics of the people, the politics of managing the natural resources. And ultimately, we've always seen where nation states want to expand. And what do they want to expand? Their geographic footprint. Why do they want to expand their geographic footprint? It's largely because of natural resources. It's wealth. And part and parcel with that is the politics of making that happen, whether they actually acquire the resources geographically or whether they acquire the resources through trade and acquisition. But it always involves politics. So in my mind today, geopolitics really is focused on geography and politics. That's kind of how I put those words together.
Thank you very much. That's really intelligent. I was just taking notes, as a matter of fact.
Well, I have to tell my son that because he looked at me with this kind of a query look, and I said, trust me, Bryce, it's not a bad answer. And he kind of said, okay, I'll go with it. So I think it's a pretty fair assessment.
You know, what comes to mind immediately is Brexit and also Russia and Crimea, never mind Latvia, Estonia, etc. So let's just talk about business strategies and geopolitics. We're hearing a lot about Brexit and the EU. What a mess. So what's your opinion?
Brexit has been an evolving certainty, and a lot of people really haven't paid too much attention to it. The EU, people tend to look at the European Union as just this monolithic institution, a bunch of member states. But inside the EU, for the past 10 years or so, there has been a lot of unrest, increased uncertainty, some nations taking on more of a load than the others with respect to who contributes to the overall wellness of the European Union, the strength of their banking systems, the regulatory environment. The UK has done better from a GDP perspective than the rest of the EU, less perhaps, you know, Germany. England has become less and less satisfied and more dissatisfied with the regulatory environment of the EU. The fact that London has typically been the financial center of the EU, even though they never gave up the British sterling and embraced the euro dollars. But England has just become, in the migration aspect of it, has really tipped the scales. I think in the past couple of years, England, and if you go back to geography now, you know, the UK is not a big island. I mean, some of our US states are bigger than the UK. They brought in over 250,000, 300,000 migrants from Eastern Europe and in the Middle East. And most of these migrants don't really contribute to high-skilled manufacturing. In fact, I think in Germany, which brought in 800,000, less than 5% of these migrants have found work. And that puts a tremendous pressure on social systems, the public sector. England right now, they're looking to expand their trade. I mean, we hear about a lot about trade in our U.S. election. England has been sort of constrained to put almost 70% of their trade into the EU. And the EU right now, their overall GDP is hovering around 1 to 1.3%. And their manufacturing is dipping. The stability of their banks is in question. So Britain is taking the long-term view that it's better for them to go on their own. And it's going to take it's going to be a process. But a lot of the doom and gloom that was forecast when the UK was considering this vote just simply, you know, hasn't materialized. I mean, there's been a real dip in the pound, but they're going to probably lower interest rates, which makes mortgage payments easier for people. I mean, there's less interest paid on bank notes that are put in the banks, but it's ultimately going to be a wash because all of a sudden there's been a spike in foreign direct investment. Foreign companies are flying in to apply for businesses. They're looking at investing in UK manufacturing. I mean, their tourism is up. I mean, if the pound is sinking and the dollar is more advantageous, but there's really an increased interest in Britain going on its own. And you're going to see other countries in the EU taking a look at this. So for the UK, the long-term vision is healthy. For the US, there's not much of an impact. I think less than 5%, maybe 3% of our GDP is weighted in trade with the UK. And the EU as a whole is not our biggest trading partner by any stretch. But there is a lot of instability. Now, you kind of mentioned Russia and the Crimea. The EU has a lot of problems. And you know, we could talk about that later. But Europe right now is very worried about Putin. NATO is scrambling. There's a lot of shifting of resources within the European Union and NATO to bolster their defenses because it has an impact on business. It has an impact on the socioeconomic and the physiology and the psychology and the culture within Europe. And I travel there. It's really quite evident in the local press what people talk about. It is Brexit. And what does that mean? Why is the EU not as strong as it should be? Gee whiz, what about Russia? What about Russia closing off the natural gas pipelines to the EU? What about them taking over the Black Sea? What does that do to trade with Ukraine and Romania? By the way, we have all this migration coming out of the Middle East that's ongoing. There are a lot of concerns in Europe, and that has an impact on business.
So if I can jump in here and ask you to zero in on a couple of different things. Terrorism activity is headline news, and the flow of immigration from the Muslim-dominated countries coming into a predominantly Christian environment is explosive, to say the least.
Yes.
So that's just sort of like almost a camouflage of the more substantial issues underneath. But the more exacerbating the terrorism and this influx of people with low skills, it's really like pouring oil on the flame, isn't it?
It absolutely is. There's a great deal of pressure put on businesses today. Now, it gets around to a business strategy. You know, companies need to be aware of what's going on from a geopolitical standpoint. I mean, politics drives economics. Economics drives business. It really doesn't go the other way around. But it's very interrelated, but there is a sequence. And business strategies today, certainly corporate leadership, they need to understand what's going on in the world and in a specific region. Companies that are, you know, need to be, that do a lot of trade, their product, their services are pushed into Asia. They need to understand what's going on with China and the South China Sea. What does that mean for maritime trade, the flow of goods and services, the movement of people, the stability of their currencies, how, you know, are countries becoming more protectionism? What is their relationship with a large manufacturing base in China? What's the sense of nationalism? What does that play on public institutions? What does that mean for state-owned enterprises? Same as looking at the EU. Companies need to pay attention to what's going on. What does that mean? And what do those issues mean for their clients? What does it mean for their competition? your business strategy needs to consider the answers to those questions. And what does it mean for the company themselves? The safety of their employees, where they want to invest their money, the cost of risk-adjusted capital, where they want to introduce products and services, what's going on geopolitically, how that's playing out in the streets and with the general population and the consumers. They have to understand that. And what is it that happened? What is it that companies have to do now to make sure that their goals and objectives are protected? What is that action that a company has to take? And also, what's the company's plan for a crisis? You mentioned putting oil on gas. We're seeing terrorist events that are very serious. Not only is it large numbers of people that are being killed, but it sets a mood across a region. It affects business. It affects consumer behavior. It affects the movement of people. So it also affects the mobility of company employees, their safety. What do companies do? What's in their business strategy to deal with a crisis? Because inevitably, these events are going to continue across the globe, which is more of an intelligence-related topic to discuss. But just for the sake of argument, these events are going to continue to spread across the globe. They will ultimately reach into North America, and it will affect companies. So what is your plan with your data, with your people? What is the succession plan for employees that have responsible positions? You know, these things, they matter. Social media is a mechanism now for industrial espionage, not to mention terrorist activities. So the phones that employees use become a mouthpiece if it's not encrypted. Social media and what companies allow to be put on social media can indicate a lot about what's going on in a company, what individual people are doing. So people that are interested in creating havoc, people that are interested in performing espionage against U.S. companies, they look at how a company is behaving overseas. They look at what's being said on their websites, what's being said and displayed in social media. And companies need to be aware of that, and they need to ensure that their business strategy accommodates and forces leadership to periodically review what's going on in the world, what is the impact on that region, and in that region, what is the company's market behavior? Is that where they want to do business? What's the cost of doing business? And what are the risks associated with doing business?
I want to drill down on this, citing some examples and asking you to comment to just elaborate further on what you've just told us. So first of all, Eastern Europe, meaning east of Germany and right. west of Russia. So the area of Poland, in particular Poland and the Baltic. Let's talk about Poland. Going back in history, when there was Pope John Paul and the unions that became anti-Russia, anti-communist, or anti-authoritarian, that mm-hmm. all led to the fall of the Soviet Empire and the Berlin Wall, the fall of Berlin.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
and then what's happened to the economy and what's happened to people? Let's talk about the geography thing and the people and the politics. And now, and today is July 15, 2016, and I say that because this will be heard years from now. So just to give people an existence of this peek into the time machine. So in Warsaw, in Poland, there's political change going on right now, tightening up, if you will, more of a rightward shift away from whatever it was before, which was way different anyway from the communist era. Could you comment on that and the impact on business?
There is a sense within, you know, Poland is a member of the EU. What you characterized is what happened in Poland that drove to the collapse of the Soviet Union and Berlin Wall. That's all quite true. And Poland wanted to go into a free market economy. They wanted to become independent and go on their own. They joined the European Union because it's a single market for their goods and services to be exchanged. Obviously, they're in Europe. Being able to transfer goods and services without borders, without passports and everything became very advantageous. But the EU over time, and Poland has realized this, EU has really expanded far beyond what it was originally intended to be. In fact, you mentioned today's July 15th. Yesterday, July 14th, Alan Greenspan, our former Federal Reserve Chairman, was asked about Brexit, and he said that about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when he was in his role as a Fed Chairman, the EU seemed to be on track. He said today, as of yesterday, he said the EU is a failure. And that's a pretty extraordinary statement coming from an individual who's mere short words drove all the world's markets. And Poland today is becoming much more nationalistic. They really fear the incursion of Putin on their borders. It goes back to history. Poland and the countries east of them, Lithuania, Estonia, Belarus, have all been just because of the flat land, Russia just rolled through them. And they're very concerned about that. NATO has bolstered their presence in Poland. There is a movement, a referendum in Poland to withdraw from the EU. So Poland is looking at having a more independent relationship with trading partners, bringing back their own currency, and establishing a much more direct relationship with the US, with the UK, because they really have a fear about their national security and their business and their economic stability, because it is now so tightly constrained to the European Union.
A few years ago, Greece was the first to balk at the EU, and yet they were afraid to or couldn't withdraw from the EU. And now they're stuck, of course, with all these debts. So here you have Great Britain pulling away, and this is kind of a shock. And so everyone has been thinking about, is it going to be Italy? Is it going to be Spain? The southern tier. And now you have this happening, apparently, in the east. So Alan Greenspan looked through his telescope and saw things happening a long time ago, because originally the EU was a trading bloc, and it evolved into free trade, free access, and then they started getting into politics and telling everybody else what to do. And that's what led to the Brexit, correct?
That's a big part of it. I mean, the banking institutions are weak, and the regulatory environment that's driven out of Brussels has a broad impact on some countries more than others. And people, in the end, I mean, they are who they are. They're either French, they're Italian, they're British, and they worry about their sovereignty. So, you know, when a regulatory environment comes out to tell you that you can only use vacuum cleaners that are made a certain way and made it after a certain year and have a certain amperage, you kind of step back and wonder, really, kind of what's next? You know, you mentioned Greece. Greece is really not an industrial country. It is more agricultural based. It is very much reliant upon selling its agricultural products into the EU. It doesn't export very in many other places. The UK is an industrial country, and so it has the ability to develop exports that can go worldwide. So it's this elasticity and ability to succeed away from the EU is a lot better than Greece. Italy and Spain, they are industrial, not as industrial as England, and they're taking another look at the EU. France views Brexit as a plus for them, moving the financial center of the EU from London to Paris. They're really pushing that for right now. France will always be a proponent of the EU. France is all about Europe, and it's really that sort of the progressive socialist political view of how Europe should run. But I think that as companies, U.S. companies, look to do business in the EU, they just need to be aware of what is going on. You know, establishing a business, selling a product, that's all fair game. But you need to understand the regulatory environment, how it's changing. What does that mean for trade policies? And how does it affect labor? Right now, people that you would hire to do business in Europe on your behalf, with your company, can come and go throughout Europe without passports. That will change as countries seek to change their formal relationship with the EU or withdraw from the EU. So these are just things they need to consider in a business strategy.
Very quickly, if we can.
Sure.
South China Sea, that really is sharpening into, in my view, a clash with Japan. As you could see that with recent election there and the consideration of change in their constitution. So can you comment on that?
I haven't traveled to Asia for about 5 or 6 months. My focus has really been in other directions. I pay attention to what goes on there. I attend some of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, business meetings here in D.C. There is a concern about China. China is the center of manufacturing for Southeast Asia. They fund a number of projects throughout Southeast Asia, highway development, dam development, factories and manufacturing, whether it's China providing money to Southeast Asian countries or China's state-owned enterprises actually homesteading and performing the work themselves and actually own, being a partial owner and operating the different assets and facilities that they create in Southeast Asia. They have a very dynamic, intimate footprint in Southeast Asia. So when the political arm of China and the military decide to occupy and expand islands in the South China Sea that are directly in the middle of international shipping lanes, that poses a problem. They've already signaled that they are going to make directives about what ships can and can't do, where ships can go, and the courses that they can steer. That has a direct bearing on trade, cost of doing business. So, yeah, businesses that, U.S. businesses especially, need to look at what's going on with trade. I mean, trade is a big topic in the presidential cycle right now. And trade has a direct bearing on U.S. companies' ability to do business and the partnerships that they develop. So I guess the short answer about what's going on in the South China Sea, I think that we're seeing just the opening rounds of what China wants to do. I think if you want to understand what China ultimately is looking to do, you just have to go back in history and look at what Japan did in the same area, but on a lesser scale, because technology was not nearly as robust as it is today. Japan did exactly the same thing back in the late 30s, because they wanted to interrupt and control shipping lanes and be the dominant trading partner in the natural resources in the area, or at least guarantee access to them. And history seems to be repeating itself. We'll have to see how it plays out.
We're talking with Hampton Dowling, managing partner of the HCB Group, based in Washington, D.C. It's my pleasure to have you on our show. It's been terrific. You have a great weekend, and please come back again.
I will, Ed. You have a good weekend as well.
This is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net, signing off today from Washington, D.C. and San Diego, California. GlobalRadioTalkShow.com.
Real nice, the bloody show is fun. Come on, baby. Drive crazy. But Mr. Rankish is great. Balls of fire.